big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be stricken with lateral epicondylitis if you strained our relationship with the idea that you missed today's show. Digital accessibility. How do you make your digital products more accessible? Think data visualization, color choices, alternative text, screen readers, and more. Laura Patch from Sierra Club reveals the details. This is part of our 20 NTC coverage. Also, inclusive design. Nick Steenhout says forget about upgrading for accessibility. Rather, he wants you to design inclusively from the beginning. Whichever path you take, the point is to eliminate barriers to communications. He's an independent accessibility consultant. This is also part of our 20 NTC coverage. On Tony's Take Two, dismantling racism. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits, your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. Here is digital accessibility. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20 NTC. That's the 2020 Nonprofit Technology Conference. We were supposed to be in Baltimore. The conference was canceled, but we are persevering virtually, irrespective. Our coverage of 20 NTC is sponsored by Cougar Mountain Software. Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. You can go to tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. My guest now is Laura Patch. She is digital project manager for the Sierra Club. Laura, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm a pleasure. I'm glad this worked out. And I know you're well and safe and glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Your topic is everyday accessibility, how everyone can make digital products more accessible. Why is this important for all nonprofits, irrespective of what proportion you think your users are or your visitors are with disabilities?
Sure. So there's definitely a portion of the population that has permanent disabilities that we should be concerned with. They have high buying power, disposable income that will make them want to donate to your lovely nonprofit. Mm. And by having accessible digital products, you make sure that they can participate in your mission. But also there's situational disabilities. If you think about the last time you took your cell phone out and it was bright and sunny and you couldn't see your screen, that's actually an accessibility issue. And if you focus on creating high contrast images, like you would for somebody who has color vision problems, then you're benefiting all the people using your website on their phone in bright sun. So thinking about those situational ones will help your organization as well.
Okay. Thank you. I want people to understand that. I've had NTC guests say that. I don't know. It was a couple of years ago since we've covered accessibility. But yeah, thank you. There's a little pause in the video. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pause the recording. I'm going to ask you to leave the meeting and come back in. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to pause now. All right. Let's see if this works a little better. Maybe not so much video hesitation. So this is, you're covering every digital product you say, not just, this is not just for websites.
Correct. In my presentation, I talk about how to make your documents, your slides, and data visualization more accessible.
Okay. Should we start with documents? Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right.
So one of the things that I suggest is to make sure that you use the actual heading setting, whether you're using Microsoft Word, Google Docs, whatever your platform is. this is important because if you take text and you just change the format of it, then screen readers can't tell somebody that, right? Whereas if you use heading one, heading two, heading three, a screen reader will include that in what it reads to the person. So it helps them navigate through your content.
Ah, okay. I don't think many people are doing that. I think most people just write a heading and then boldface it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So you really want to take the time to change it so it's heading, and you can actually adapt the style so that once you apply heading one, all of your heading ones have that style. Okay. So it's really actually easier work.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. Then rather than you have to do it manually. Okay. Okay. What else? What else for documents?
This is one that people also frequently forget. We're doing a better job on websites, but all images should have alternative text. That should be no longer than two sentences, preferably even shorter than two sentences. It should describe what's happening in the image without using words like image of, photo of. And this, again, also helps with screen readers. It helps if the image is loading slowly as well. So if you have poor internet connection, you're, again, on your cell phone with no cell service, you can still tell what is conveyed in that image by the alternative text.
Okay. Why do you not use the language photo of or image of or something like that?
Because the screen reader will tell people that. It will say image, and then it'll tell your alternative text, so it's repetitive to keep saying it. You okay. just want to describe what people might see if they saw the image.
Okay. Okay. Anything else with images?
No.
Do we have to be concerned about color of our images or anything like that?
If you're going to put text over the image, then yes, you want to make sure that your image background and that text have a high contrast ratio. There's some places on the internet that you can check to make sure that that's working well. But basically, you want to have either a light background with dark text or vice versa. And if you can't achieve that because a lot of things are happening in the image, then doing some sort of floating background behind your text with playing around with opacity concerns, that will work well too.
Okay. I'm sorry, what do you mean capacity? What is that?
Opacity.
Oh, opacity. So opacity. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I've seen that. All right. Opacity. Yes. Yes. I'm trainable. All right. Opacity, of course. All right. More documents. Sure. Sure.
Yeah. So those are some good tips for documents.
Is that it? Is that it for documents? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Where should we go? Data visualization, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. This kind of expands more on that color stuff that we were just talking about, where you want to make sure you have high contrast colors. If you do have colors, like say you have a graph that has five colors, so it becomes really difficult to make sure that every single one of those colors has high contrast, you'll want to add patterns.
It's time for a break. Wegner CPAs. Changes to Paycheck Protection Program loan forgiveness. There have been many. But none this week. Congress skipped a week. Wegner has an up-to-date free webinar that explains the latest. Go to WegnerCPAs.com, click Resources, and Recorded Events. Now back to Digital Accessibility with Laura Patch.
So I have some visuals for this in my presentation, so let me see if I can describe it well. Imagine that you're looking at a map, a route map of buses, right? And you have five routes, and there's purple, blue, green, yellow, red. If those arrows for the route cross each other and you can't tell the difference between purple and blue, you can't tell where the route goes. But if you add a pattern to the color, say one of them is a solid line and one of them is a dotted line, then you can continue to follow the path, even if you can't tell the difference between those two colors.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah.
So, and this works in graphs as well. If you have a pie chart, Microsoft makes this really easy, but you can do it in other programs where you can add patterns to your wedges. So do a light color in the background and then do a higher, darker color of the same shade, right? So it can be like blue with blue polka dots on top of it so that they can tell that pie slice goes to whatever your label is on the side.
Okay. And if you don't do this, what is it the problem that all the colors are going to look similar?
Yes.
To someone who has accessibility issues?
Yes. If you can't see colors, then they can't tell what pie slice goes to what data point.
Yeah. Okay. Same thing with bar charts. I guess, is there anything, same would apply to bar charts as well as pie charts?
Yes.
Graphs, you talked about lines. So that's the analogy there is the map, right? Line graphs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The thing to think about, right, is that accessibility guidelines say you can't use color alone to convey meaning. So when you're looking at graphs, you want to make sure that somebody can't tell, like, if they can't tell the difference between colors, they can still understand the information you're trying to convey. So another way to think about it is, like, if you're looking at pins on maps, right, they might have different colors for restaurants versus community service places. But if you can't tell the difference between those two colors, that doesn't really help you. If you add an icon to that pin, suddenly, like, the icon of a fork tells you that that's an eatery versus just the color of the pin.
Oh, I see. And then how will a reader interpret that? A screen reader?
That's an excellent question. Usually you have to make sure that there is data labels as well. So label that as restaurant versus just the information.
Okay. I could see a map. I'm just trying to understand how a screen reader interprets a map like that, you know, local ATMs or gas stations. It can do that?
Maps are some of the most difficult things to make fully accessible. So there's basically especially for a non-developer person, it's very difficult because there's things you can put into the code of a map to give things labels. So most of the time, if you're thinking about accessibility from a non-developer standpoint, you're going to be thinking about the visual ramifications. So those icons in your pins, always having a list of the information instead of just the map visual is really helpful too, because the screen reader can read the list as opposed to the map itself.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, I was wondering if you, well, yeah, that wouldn't make sense for people who don't have a disability to leave out a map and just do a list. But okay, so have both.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
yeah.
The screen reader can make sense of the list. Okay, awesome. Okay. Anything else about data visualization?
No, I think those are the key points for non-developers.
Okay. What was the other category you had?
Slides.
Oh, for slides. Okay. PowerPoint or Google Slides. Okay.
Yes. So the same thing kind of occurs for slides as it does for images in documents. You want to make sure you have that alternative text. But the thing that's unique about slides is that you want to make sure you're paying attention to the order items are on. If somebody can't use a mouse, they'll use the tab button on their keyboard. And the order that your items on your slide are is the order that the screen reader will also read your slide through, right? So an easy way to test how a screen reader is going to read your content to someone is to use that tab button and navigate as if you don't have a mouse. So for example, if you want your slide title to be read first, you want to make sure that the first tab is that. And I've seen a lot of slides where it'll be the image, footer, slide content, and then title. And you're like, well, This would make no sense if it was being read to me in that order.
How do you change it? Is it the sequence with which you put them on the template slide as you're making it? How do you control what the tab sequence is?
Yeah, that's the default way. So like as you add things, that'll be the order. But you can right click on any item on your slide and send it to the back, send it to the front, send it forward, backwards. So you just want to play around with that until it's the right order that you want.
Oh, that's what that thing means. Send forward, send back.
Yes.
Okay. All right,
That
thanks.
can get a little tricky for designers because they'll be like putting, they'll block certain things with another square or something. So you do have to pay attention to like if you're destroying what is visually showing as well. But for the most part, you want to make sure that tab order makes sense.
Okay. And that applies for either Google Slides or PowerPoint. You
Yes.
just right click on an item, and that's how you can set the sequence. Okay. Anything else? Slides wise?
No, that's it for slides.
Okay. Should we say anything more about color choices overall? Or
Sure.
what? Okay.
There are some programs that you can check your contrast levels, as well as develop a color palette that is accessible. So if your organization hasn't done much in accessibility, you might want to talk to your design team just to like tweak some of those colors to make sure that they're high contrast. Sierra Club actually just recently changed our color palette to make it more accessible so that we can use more color combinations.
Can you name any of those resources that are available to check your color contrast? Any
Yes.
sites you can send us to?
My favorite is Color Palette Accessibility Checker. It allows you to put your full color palette into their system and then check each color against all of the colors in your palette for that accessibility purpose. If you're just checking two colors for contrast purposes, Web AIM Color Contrast Checker is a really good one. Both of those tell you A and double A levels. So the web accessibility has level A, which is the least, the minimum that you need to do. Double A, which is what most organizations will aim for, and triple A. Triple A is very difficult to do, and you kind of have to constantly maintain it to reach it. So if you're thinking about all the lawsuits that are coming out about accessibility, they're mostly talking about double A standards.
Oh, what are some of those lawsuits around digital products?
The big one that came out in within the last year is the Domino's case. Somebody was trying to order pizza online, I think actually through their app, and was unable to do so. So they sued Domino's for accessibility, and won the case.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
So
Well,
one of the
it
things
sounds.
that we're still trying to get figured out is the ADA definitely applies to digital products.
Okay.
Spaces are considered public domain, like public, not public domain, but like the public space, similar to if you walked into the restaurant.
Right.
But Congress hasn't actually passed anything that's told us what those guidelines are. So most people are using the web accessibility, web content accessibility guidelines as what they are aiming for, but it's not legally stated yet.
Okay. But it's a benchmark for now until the courts decide on a standard. Okay. What else? What else should we be talking about?
What's an oh, I have one more resource that might be helpful for people.
Okay. Yeah.
It's called the Color Blindness Simulator. And it allows you to upload an image and then check different ways of color blindness. So it'll simulate a red color blindness, a blue color blindness, so you can see what that image looks like if somebody can't see all the images.
Oh, okay. And what is that again? Color
Color Blindness Simulator.
simulator. Okay. Those are excellent. You ticked off like dozens of, I don't know, two dozen things or something. Excellent. Should we leave it there? Does that sound feel like we've
That sounds
given
great.
good coverage? Okay, cool.
Thank you very much, Laura Patch. She is a digital product manager at Sierra Club. Laura, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of the virtual 20NTC. We're sponsored by Cougar Mountain Software.
We need to take a break. Cougar Mountain Software. Their accounting product, Denali, is built for nonprofits from the ground up so that you get an application that supports the way you work, that has features you need, and exemplary support that understands you. They have a free 60-day trial on the listener landing page at tony.ma/cougarmountain. Now, time for Tony's Take Two, Your Dismantling Racism Journey. That's our newest special episode, and it's out. You will have a long journey, so start with this single step. My guest is Pratichi Shah. She's president and CEO of Flourish Talent Management Solutions. Starting where you are, with your people, your culture, and your leadership, how do you gather data about racist structures that are right under your nose? Who do you invite to the conversation? She helps you see the way forward. Next week, I'll have it on YouTube if you want to wait for the video. That is Tony's Take Two. Now it's time for Inclusive Design with Nick Steenhout.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 20NTC, the 2020 Nonprofit Technology Conference. We're sponsored at 20NTC by Cougar Mountain Software. With me now is Nick Steenhout. He's an independent accessibility consultant. Nick, welcome.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me. Really nice to chat with you.
Thank you. I'm very glad we could work this out virtually. And it's good to know that you're well and safe outside Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yeah, it's difficult times, but we're staying safe. Yep.
All right. Your NTC topic is Forget Accessibility, Think Inclusive Design. So what is it about accessibility that you want us to forget?
I think that when we're focusing only on accessibility, we're forgetting that accessibility is good for everyone. Now, as an individual with a disability myself, I will never forget that implementing web accessibility is above and beyond for people with disabilities to be able to use the web. But if we're thinking only in those terms, we tend to forget that making sure color contrasts are good, you know, you're not using gray text on gray background, that's good for people with low vision, but it's also good for you when you're using your mobile device in full sun. When you're talking about making sure the target area for a click is big enough for someone who has cerebral palsy and doesn't have fine motor control, to click on that little checkbox, it's also good for someone that has big fingers and trying to fill a form on the bus or public transit. When we're talking about plain language, we're also talking about, well, maybe someone has a functional impairment. Maybe it's a young mom with a very young baby that has colic, so she's trying to juggle a sick baby in one hand and read up information on her mobile phone on the other, and the cognitive load is very, very impacted. So there's all these things that are really important for people with disabilities, but that also happen to benefit everybody. A little bit like in the physical world, we started implementing curb cuts that was good for wheelchair users, but it's also good for parents with pushchairs, for their kids, for delivery people with, it appears I'm on table. You may have to edit me in post.
Yeah, let's keep going. A lot of times the way it appears is not is not what's getting recorded. I've had that happen a couple times. So we'll just continue as long as we can still hear each other.
Yeah.
And if the video becomes unusable, then we'll just do the audio. Yeah. Also, curb cuts also help those of us who are pulling luggage.
Yep. So it's really a question of universal access. And when we start thinking about what we're doing, we really should talk about inclusive design. It's going from situations that are equal but different to situation where everyone can benefit.
Yeah. Okay. What is your own disability?
I'm a wheelchair user.
Okay. Does that impact screen use?
No, it doesn't. Not for me. But I've had a situation where I was a few years ago, I managed to broke a wrist because I slid on ice and I canned out of the sidewalk, fell in the street, broke a wrist. So I had problem moving around, obviously. And about a week later, I broke the other wrist in a car accident. So I was severely impaired from being able to use the keyboard. Normally type about 80 words a minute. And when that happened, I was typing two-fingered, and it was very, very awkward. So having been an accessibility expert for a large number of years, I was also faced with having to learn things I knew were there. I knew the tools, for example, Dragon Naturally Speaking, to be able to speak to the computer for interacting. I knew all that. I'd used all that in testing, but the point was really brought home about, you know, as a wheelchair user, I realize the barriers in the physical world, but as a suddenly web disabled user, I had to relearn all these things again.
Yeah. I see how deeply personal this is for you. I've had guests on talking about accessibility, and I know we're supposed to, you want to think of inclusive design, but those guests were framing it as accessibility. I've never heard anyone mention the size of a radio button or the size of anything that you need to click on as being difficult to land on for someone with cerebral palsy or I guess other neuromuscular disabilities as well. Yeah.
In general, we tend to know about accessibility for screen reader users because it's been the most obvious, the biggest barrier is for people that have vision impairments and rely on assistive technology like screen reader users. But the fact is, there's a whole range of disabilities that affect using the web. There's, you know, obviously people with no vision or low vision. There's people with hearing impairments that, for example, if there's no transcript for your show, they're not going to be able to interact with the show or get material out of the show. But a side issue to someone who is born deaf and grows up deaf, where American Sign Language is their first language, the grammar, the structure of the language is so completely different from English. So when they're interacting with content, a lot of these native ASL users, English is their second language. And then if we don't write in plain English, it makes content difficult to digest. There's all kinds of little things that if it's not something we're used to or we don't stop to think about it, there's impact all over the place.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. So how should we continue? Are there other design concepts, ideas that you want to share, just like sort of listing them and explaining them, or should we approach this some other way?
Oh, sure. If we're going to use video, let me share a couple of the slides I have in my deck for the presentation, which might actually bring something to the viewers. We're talking talking a lot about equality, making the web equal for everyone. And in this slide, I have an image of three kids, a very short kid, a middle height kid, and a tall kid, looking at a ball game over a fence, and they're all on a box that allows them to be a little bit higher, but the box is the same height for everyone. So the very tall kid gets to see very well above the fence, but the very short kid still can't see above it.
Mm-hmm.
If we contrast that to equity, which is a concept that we're talking a lot about, is that, well, the very tall kid does not need any boxes to see over the fence. The kid that's, you know, halfway between the two can use one box and he can see over the box. And then the very short kid, if you stack two of those boxes, suddenly he can see over the fence. So we're talking of an equitable situation. And that's one of the concepts that I want people to realize, is we have to stop thinking about accessibilities in terms of equality, but we really should start thinking about it in terms of equity. But if we push further,
and thank you, Nick, for explaining what's on the slides, because a lot of people won't be seeing the video. It's an audio podcast, and then if our video is good, I'll put that on the YouTube channel. But most people are just getting audio through the podcast. So thank you for sounding like a screen reader as you describe what's in the photo.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. It's something I've gotten used to do when I do presentations, is that I rarely put visuals up on the slide that I won't take time to explain, because I don't know who in my audience has vision issues. I don't know who may not be able to process an image. They're better at processing the audio words than what they're seeing. So I always try to make sure that I describe what's going on, because it just makes sense. The other thing is that when we're thinking about this relationship between equality and equity, we could also start thinking about barrier-free, which is the step beyond that, which is really thinking inclusively. If in our thinking process we think about whichever thing we design, and that includes a fence, where we have to go through the process of, well, what would be an equal experience? What would be an equitable experience? How about we do a fence that everybody can see through without needing boxes to get up? So in this image, I have the same three kids and a fence, but instead of being a solid plank fence, it's actually a wire fence that everybody can see through. So I really want people to shift thinking from this idea of us versus them, people with disabilities and people without disabilities, disabled people versus abled people. I want to get people started to think about, we're all in this together, and we have to build barrier-free environments, whether it's in the built environment or on the web. So it's really important to start that shift in thinking.
Okay. And it's sort of, I don't know if revolutionary is too strong a term, but you definitely want to shift it. You want to shift, at least. If it's not revolutionary, it's a substantial movement from where people are thinking now. My sense of it is a lot of web, and I guess we shouldn't even limit it to websites, but it's because it's all digital products, right? Whether it's a Word document using headings, using the headings format versus writing the text and then highlighting it, which a reader isn't going to recognize. So it's all digital products. We're not only talking about websites. My sense is that most of the thinking is that, you know, you create something and then maybe you go back and try to adapt it
which would be, you know, adding the same. That would be your, that would be the first picture that you just showed, which would be changing it, changing the way it appears for everybody, or the way it's designed. Yeah, the way it appears for everybody. After I've already done my design and creation, then I go back and add code for a screen reader, let's say. All right. My sense is that that's the more prevalent
one. Yeah.
The more prevalent methods.
That is what's happening mostly out there. We really want to shift the thinking in terms of thinking about accessibility from the get-go. Obviously, right. In all my talking about accessibility, I never forget the primary goal of this is making things work for people with disabilities, because we have such a need to access information. Quick example, so much of the information now is only available online because of the coronavirus. But so many of the sites that provide that information is not available because they're not accessible. So we have a failure of the system for people with disabilities accessing information, which is critical and even maybe vital. So we want to think about accessibility from the very early phases of the first design, whether it's wireframe or even just concepts. One of the complaints a lot of the people I interact with and have done for over 25 years that have been involved in this wonderful world is that people say, hey, Nick, accessibility, yeah, I get it, but it's so expensive. And then I start telling them about an experience from my own life. I know someone who built a house and they just had two steps at the entrance, and the door was fairly narrow. You know, it was 28 inch door or something like that, 30 inch, not sure. And then they became a wheelchair user and they had to retrofit the house. They had to actually remove the front door. They had to remove bricks around the front door to make a bigger opening. They had to put a ramp in. And of course, that was very expensive. But had they actually built a house that was accessible in the first place, had they put in a door that was wider and had a no-step entrance, that added cost at the time of building would have been maybe 3, maybe 5% more instead of costing tens of thousands of dollars to fix. Digital accessibility is the same thing. If you build it accessibly in the first place, it won't cost you anymore, because in theory, your designers, your developers, your quality assurance testers, everybody in that chain, in that workflow, should be having the skills and the knowledge to build it accessibly. Now, the reality is, it doesn't always happen, but it should. So accessibility does not have to be expensive and can be baked in from the start. A little bit like blueberry muffins. Have you ever tried to bake blueberry muffins and put the blueberries after the muffins are cooked? It's not going to work.
I've not tried that, no. The only reference I can think about in popular culture with blueberry muffins, that makes me think of the movie Casino, where the head of the casino tells the baker that he wants the same number of blueberries in every muffin, because he just cut open a muffin that had very few, and his breakfast companion right. had a dozen in his, and but that's not what you're talking about. Sorry. That's a silly digression, but I like movies. And Casino is a very good one.
Time for our last break. Turn to communications. Relationships. The world runs on them. We all know that. Turn 2 is led by former journalists so that you get help building relationships with journalists. Those relationships will help you when you need to be heard, so people know you're a thought leader in your field. And they specialize in working with nonprofits. They're at turn-2.co. We've got buttloads more time for inclusive design from 20 NTC.
Any other idea? What other ideas do you want to share around inclusive design?
For me, One of the other important concepts to think about is accessibility is not a checklist. We're using standards and guidelines. For example, the standard right now for checking if a site is accessible or not is the Web Content Accessibility Guideline version 2.1. That's the most recent version of the guidelines. And if we're going through that, we end up using a checklist. Are all the images have alternate attribute? Can we get through to all the elements on the web page using the keyboard only? Is there enough contrast between text and background? And there's a long list. There's like nearly 80 success criteria, and each of them have specific testing checkpoints to look at. Mm-hmm. But if we think only in terms of conforming to the standard, we're falling back into this trap of looking at putting the blueberries back in the muffin after the muffins have been baked. We're looking at basically the minimal amount of work we need to do to get away with it, to not be sued, for example. Whereas I really want people to start thinking in terms of, we want our website to be usable by as many people as possible with as little difficulty as possible. So we should think about getting away from accessibility in terms of a checklist. The checklist is useful as a way of getting a pulse of the health of our website, but we have to look at everything else as well. And if we've thought about accessibility from the very early stages of the project, then at that point, that should be fairly easy. The checklist is just there as a safeguard, but we are looking also at the best practices. For example, a ramp. You're looking at a ramp in the built environment. The Americans with Disabilities Act accessibility guidelines call for ramp to have no more than 1 in 12 gradient. That means the ramp doesn't go shorter than 12 foot for every foot of height it goes up. And that's a minimum. Most people with mobility impairments should be able to do that. But what about putting a ramp that is with a gentle slope, where it's 1 in 15 maybe? It's not going to hurt anything. You're just adding a couple feet to your ramp. 9 times out of 10, you don't have a space limitation to do that, and suddenly you've made it easier for everyone. So thinking in terms of digital accessibility, we can think about similar issues. For example, color contrast. The guideline says you have to have a contrast of 4.5:1 to be sufficient for people with low vision. How about you do something like 6:1? You increase the contrast a little bit, you use better colors, maybe you use a bolded font appropriately. And at that point, you've gone beyond the checklist and you've made the site more usable for everyone.
Mm. All right. Beyond the standard, beyond the minimum standard. Yeah.
Yeah.
You make a distinction between disability and impairment. Could you flesh that out, please?
Yeah. I'm coming at it from having worked in the independent living movement for a number of years, where one of the basic concept is my disability is not the fact that I use a wheelchair. My disability is the fact that you have 15 steps to get into your building. My disability is not that I'm blind, but that you're not offering alternative format for your menu. So we're talking about a difference between a condition and a disability. The impairment is I'm a wheelchair user, Joe is blind, Julie is deaf. Those are the impairments, the condition. The disability comes into effect when society builds environments that have barriers. So in effect, the disability does not come from within. The disability comes from without. If you build something that has barriers, you disable me. And that, I think, is a very important distinction to make.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, well, I can see how this is, like I said, deeply personal for you. And you've been thinking about these things for decades, these concepts, and the disabilities that the culture has built, the disabilities that the society has built. How do you want to wrap up, please?
I'd like to leave people with one message about accessibility. It's a continuum. It's not a be-all or end-all. You know, it's not because you feel you can't make everything accessible that you shouldn't even try. The more you do it, the more accessible things are going to be. And start now. Just start now. Make little changes. Your website doesn't use headings. See if you can implement headings. Look at the little things you can do, the low-hanging fruits, because the more you put in, the easier it's going to be for more people to use your site or your documents, whether it's PDF, Word, whichever, web-based resources. Start now and do as much as you can without necessarily worrying about being an expert that's done this for 20 years. Talk to people about accessibility, see what they suggest, and try to implement in your workflow, in your website, whether you're the executive director of nonprofit that never really thought about it. Start thinking about it. Start the discussion.
Thank you. Nick Steenhout, independent accessibility consultant. Thank you very much for sharing, Nick.
Thanks, Tony. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Please stay safe outside Vancouver. And thank you very much for being with Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of 20NTC. We are sponsored by Cougar Mountain Software. Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Next week, more from 20NTC's smart speakers. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution made for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz managed the stream. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.